Chapter 28, The Ultra Real. There are two ways to be fooled. One is to believe what isn't true. The other is to refuse to believe what is true. Soren Kierkegaard, 1813 to 1855. In all this writing, one word seemed to come up again and again. Real. Never before my coma had I realized just how deceptive a word can be. The way I had been taught to think about it, both in medical school and in that school of common sense called life, is that something is either real, a car accident, a football game, a sandwich on the table in front of you, or it's not. In my years as a neurosurgeon, I'd seen plenty of people undergo hallucinations. I thought I knew just how terrifying unreal phenomena could be to those experiencing them. And during my few days of ICU psychosis, I'd had a chance to sample some impressively realistic nightmares as well. But once they passed, I quickly recognized those nightmares for the delusions they were. Neuronal phantasmagoria stirred up by brain circuitry struggling to get running again. But while I was in coma, my brain hadn't been working improperly. It hadn't been working at all. The part of my brain that years of medical school had taught me was responsible for creating the world I lived and moved in, and for taking the raw data that came in through my senses and fashioning it into a meaningful universe, that part of my brain was down and out. And yet, despite all of this, I had been alive and aware, truly aware, in a universe characterized above all by love, consciousness, and reality. There was that word again. There was, for me, simply no arguing this fact. I knew it so completely that I ached. What I'd experienced was more real than the house I sat in, more real than the logs burning in the fireplace. Yet there was no room for that reality in the medically trained scientific worldview that I'd spent years acquiring. How was I going to create room for both of these realities to coexist?